came about, the consumer assessment of healthcare providers and systems, or ICH CAPS, and their QIP, or quality improvement algorithm. And so that'll be one of several factors through which a public-facing grade for that facility will be made. We'll see a little bit more about how that gets implemented later. And also, they get used for internal quality improvement metrics. So the KDQOL, or Kidney Disease Quality of Life 36 item quality of life questionnaire, gets incorporated into care plans in dialysis centers all throughout the country. That's not a public-facing performance measure, but still gets used very, very widely. So PRNs right now have a very large role in terms of dialysis care. So with that kind of background and set of general instructions, the rest of this talk is going to be organized in this way. So first I'm going to identify some key PRMs relevant to dialysis patients that I think we really need to focus on, review key methodological issues around the use of these PRMs in dialysis clinics, and then I'm going to review with you the recommendations that we made to the KCQA for selection of the right PRMs to be looking at, modes of administration of those PRMs, and the types of support that dialysis clinics and providers need to use PRMs in dialysis. I think I'll take that time to just say, is everything coming across clear, the slides you can see and all that stuff?
Yes.
Okay, great. Okay, so talking about identifying key PRMs relevant to dialysis patients. Good way to do that, look at a conceptual framework. So Fung and Hayes created a nice conceptual framework that allows us to see many different kinds of, or many different constructs and indicators that patients would report. So it's not specific to dialysis, but it can be applied to dialysis. So we said earlier, not every patient-reported measure is an outcome. So things like demographic characteristics of patients, that can be a patient-reported measure, most certainly, not an outcome. We have patient reports about their care, experiences of care is what we also call it sometimes, preferences of care, health behaviors, those are not outcomes. They may be affected by other constructs, but they're not outcomes as such. The big outcomes we would talk about are PROs, are probably usually health-related quality of life and satisfaction with care. So if you say PROs, probably means those two constructs. Otherwise, other PRMs go through the whole range of that clinical experience. Looking first at just generic health-related quality of life, I wanted to look at this domain framework put forth by the PROMISE study, huge NIH study, been going on for about the past decade. Now, this is generic health-related quality of life, and they identify three major domains of related quality of life that include physical health, mental health, and social health. Within those, there are many, as you can see, subdomains. PROMIS represents the state of the science in generic health-related quality of life measurement now. As I said, very, very large NIH study that brought together content area experts, methodological experts, clinicians from academia, and NIH project officers, and generated multiple measures that can be assessed as both static short forms or through computer adaptive testing, so very versatile. And a very nice feature of all PROMIS measures is their T-score metric. So that defines a mean of 50 and a standard deviation of 10, and that mean is referenced to the U.S. general population. So for any group or individual that you would assess with a PROMIS measure, the score is very interpretable. You always know how far, how many standard deviations that is they are from the mean, and you know what that mean means. You know that it's referenced to the general population. They have measures for both adults and pediatric patients, and the measure, kind of this multi-domain profile measure that would replace the something like the SF-36 is called the PROMISE 29. That includes the following domains: physical function, anxiety, depression, fatigue, sleep disturbance, ability to participate in social roles and activities, pain interference, and pain intensity. So that's really what's hot in generic health-related quality of life right now, moving to targeted health-related quality of life as it is relevant to dialysis. Key measure we want to look at is the KD qual, or kidney disease quality of life scales, focusing particularly on the 36-item scale. That's derived from a larger parent instrument, the KD qual short form, much larger, created by Ron and some of his colleagues. The KD qual 36 has as its generic core the SF12, and then it has three targeted kidney-targeted subscales: burden of kidney disease, which has four items, and good reliability. It's rated on a 5-point scale from definitely true to false. An example of one of those items is my kidney disease interferes too much with my life. The second is the symptoms and problems of kidney disease. That's 12 items, also good reliability. Those items are rated on a 5-point scale from not at all bothered to extremely bothered. An example of a thing you would or not be bothered by is, to what extent are you bothered by chest pain? And then the final one is effects of kidney disease. That's an 8-item subscale, also very good reliability, rated on the same response set as symptoms and problems. And an example, one of those items is, how much does fluid restriction from kidney disease bother you? KD-QOL-36 has exemplary measurement properties. It was developed with patient input. It's brief compared to a lot of its competitors. It contains both generic and targeted health-related quality of life scales. It has evidence, reliability, and validity. It's been administered with many, many thousands of patients, making available norms to compare any clinical applications. So for that reason, the first recommendation we made to the KCQA was the continued use of the KD-QOL-36 instrument with dialysis patients for the purposes of dialysis centers' internal quality improvement. But that doesn't mean the KD-QOL-36 doesn't have the room for improvement itself. We talked a lot about the promise measures. We also said that the KD-QOL-36 includes the SF12 as its generic core. Well, now that promise has surpassed the SF12, new studies should go forward to determine if promise is a suitable replacement for that SF12 generic core, and it probably is. So that's a way that you could keep KD-QOL-36 being used with many, many dialysis patients, but also improve it and bring it up to speed in 21st century health-related quality of life function. Okay, the next PRM I'd like to talk about is experience with care. The HRQ defines that as the range of interactions with patients have with the healthcare system, including their care from health plans and from doctors, nurses, and staff in hospitals, physicians' practices, and other healthcare facilities. The major experience measure we see used in dialysis, as I mentioned previously, is the ICH CAPS. The ICH CAPS has three multi-item scales, the first of which is nephrologist communication and caring, or it's just not nephrologist, just nephrologist communication and caring. Has great reliability, 6 items. An example of one of those is, in the last 3 months, how often did your kidney doctors explain things in a way that was easy for you to understand? The second has excellent reliability. It's called providing information to patients. It has 9 items. An example of one of those items is, did dialysis center staff at this center ever review your rights as a patient with you? And the third, a little longer at 17 items, is called quality of dialysis center care and operations. It has lower but still acceptable reliability. An example of one of its items is, in the last 3 months, how often did dialysis center staff show respect for what you had to say? These three composites are accompanied by three global items as well. Now, as you said, CMS includes the ICH CAPS with its QIP reports and algorithms, and this is an example of some of the state and national averages of ICH CAPS from 2015 from the Dialysis Facility Compare website. So anyone can get on and look at what the state and national averages on these measures are. But maybe more important from a patient's perspective, you can get onto dialysis facility compare website, CMS's website, and compare different dialysis clinics on separate ICHCAPS items. So this item that, you know, kidney doctors communicate well and cared for them. You can look at the proportion that said the kidney doctors always did that, say I'm interested in these two in blue clinics, the Vita Alton Dialysis, that's where I'm from, FMC, Southwest Illinois, that's a nearby one. I can compare those to each other, as well as to the Illinois average and the national average. So in addition to being involved in the QIP algorithm, patients also always have access to ratings of dialysis facilities on the particular ICHCAPS items. The ICHCAPS has great measurement properties. It was developed with a lot of patient input. It's evidenced great reliability and validity. And as you can see, the norms are available to be used for patient consumption and trying to make decisions about which dialysis facilities they'd like to go to. So with that, we recommend the continued use of ICHCAPS for CMS's dialysis center performance monitoring. But like the KD Qual 36, the ICHCAPS also has room for improvement. Cup of the scales, in particular, it's 9 and 17 items, are fairly long, and there are statistical methods that can be used to improve parsimony, or that shorten it, by reducing the number of items while still retaining the high reliability. So knowing that it's a burden on providers and patients to do the
work.
Maybe someone wants to mute that, I'm not sure. Knowing that it's
can you mute your phones?
Knowing that it's a burden on patients and providers to administer, especially the longer scales, keeping the good statistic or psychometric properties by reducing the number of items would surely be a benefit. Now thinking about other PRMs, one I'd like to look at in particular is treatment decision making. So we're talking about dialysis. Kidney patients can choose between a lot of different types of treatments, including multiple types of dialysis. There's many types of dialysis, as well as several types of kidney transplantation. And I haven't mentioned it here, but they can also choose to do no treatments. All of these offer different all of these have differences in length and quality of life that you may obtain from them. And it's critical that patients understand the risks and benefits of each of their options if they're to give real informed consent for the treatment that they've chosen. Too often, patients just jump on dialysis without really knowing what all their options are. CMS knows that, and that's why it requires all dialysis patients to be informed of their option for transplant on a form called CMS 2728. And so the dialysis staff or provider will say, yeah, I informed so-and-so about the transplant option. But there's been mixed evidence as to how well that's really happened. So what I'm showing here is a table, crosstabs, a study from Salter and colleagues. On the rows over here where it says patient-reported KTPI, that's referring to whether the patient reported they got information about transplant or not. And then the columns under provider-reported KTPI, that's showing whether the provider said it. So it's the same encounter we're talking about. Provider is supposed to give the information about transplant to the patient. Then you ask both parties, did it really happen? A surprising number of discordants such that the patients say, no, I didn't get it. And the provider said, yes, I did pop up. Way too much for us to feel comfortable that these patients are truly getting the information they need about transplant. Therefore, the third recommendation we made to KCQA was that a PRM, that is a patient-reported measure of whether patients have been informed about their option for transplant, be adopted versus the current provider-reported option. With that, I'm going to move away from identifying the right types of PRMs to be assessed in dialysis centers and move on to the way you do it, the mode of administration. So there's lots of ways and settings, so there's lots of modes of administration and settings you can do to them. You can have patients administer the PRMs to themselves. You can do it in an interview setting, through a computer, through voice-activated phone systems. This can all be done in the clinic by mail, over the phone, the web. And you can see combinations in this matrix of, you know, various types of modes of administration and settings are possible. To keep it more brief, I'd like to focus on a newer method that's expanding, but that still needs some review before recommendations for widespread use are made, and that is web-based or electronic administration. Obviously, there's a lot of pros to doing web-based or electronic administration. It's efficient, simultaneous data entry with the capture. So in English, that's like you don't have to take a bunch of paper and pencil data and put it into a database. It just goes right in if they do it. That's great. Convenient for the patient. They can time it whenever they like. It doesn't have to be at an interviewing encounter, and they have to schedule it and all that. But there are some cons. So, you know, you open up new risks to privacy when you're sending things electronically. The upfront costs for the data capture systems used to do that can be high for some clinics. And if the software has problems, then obviously your whole project can run into integrity issues. So those are some of the cons. Another specific type of challenge is that many of the patient reported measures used in dialysis were designed to be used for paper and pencil. And although there's often no need to completely redevelop the measure, there should be additional testing to ensure that there's equivalence between electronic and paper administration. Oftentimes, these tests lead to minor changes, like updates to instructions and formatting. Therefore, the fourth recommendation is to evaluate the equivalence between electronic and paper versions of PRMs prior to widespread use. Once those studies are conducted, then that could be a real advantageous approach for many dialysis centers. And finally, I'd like to talk about the types of support for dialysis providers and clinics that may be needed to do a good job of administering PRMs and dialysis. First, cost. It's burdensome for dialysis providers and patients to do PRMs. That's not a money cost on its own, but it's time cost. So dialysis staff, it's known, have a very heavy workload, and asking them to administer patient reporting measures to their patients only adds to that. There are the financial and material costs. It costs money to have the surveys printed, bring them in, all that business, and electronic administration systems can be expensive. Additionally, if you aren't using electronic administration, you have to do data entry. That's many, many staff hours, especially for big clinics with a lot of patients. Therefore, since CMS is often the group that is requiring the use of patient-reported measures, which we obviously support, they should look for ways that maybe that we could reimburse costs for centers that are doing a particularly good job or just doing at all patient-reported measurement in dialysis centers. That could support the time and effort burden and cost burden that falls on dialysis centers for having to do this quite a bit. The second type of support I want to discuss is training. So regardless of how you're doing the patient-reported measures, some specialized skills are required, say for interview administration, understanding standardized survey administration techniques, ways to elicit unbiased, accurate responses, being able to troubleshoot when patients have questions, and understanding potentially complex skip patterns. That takes some training. Even when patients self-administer the surveys and send them back, to get accurate data and not have data entry error, you need to be able to accomplish standardized data entry protocols, which also requires training. Therefore, we recommend the continued development of effective, low-cost training programs to help providers administer PRMs, especially e-learning programs. And with that, I'll conclude the talk. I'm happy to say we discovered a lot of successes in the use of PRMs in dialysis. There's great measures available, and they're used extensively. There's room to improve those measures as well. There's also room to improve administration methods and supporting staff in administering PRMs. Well, thank you, and I'll open up for questions.
Hi, Devin.
Yep.
Hi, this is Jenny Shen. So that was a great talk. I have a question. So you know the ICH
sure.
caps? Is there something similar for home dialysis for PD and for home hemo?
I'll defer to Ron, but I want to say no. I don't think there's a special CAPS module for that.
Okay. Yeah, it's a no.
And is there a reason for that?
Well, just there hasn't been an opportunity yet.
Okay.
I mean, CMS was interested in hemo, but they haven't said they want any, you know, home dialysis, or no one else has asked for it.
Okay.
But I mean, there is an opportunity if someone can get someone interested in it.
Okay. Because I think there, I have to double check. I thought there's somebody who might be developing it, but I didn't know.
Oh, that's possible. I mean,
okay.
Not within the CAPS team, though.
Okay. Okay. And then another question I had. So you already brought up a lot of the great problems with administering these questionnaires and surveys. So something I've come across is a lot of our patients are diabetic and they're blind. Is that been something that's been addressed with how the measures are measured? Is it? I guess if you have somebody administering them in person, then it's less of an issue.
Well, that's a very interesting point, Jenny. I didn't see anything in the literature about that specifically, although, you know, diabetes is top etiology for ESRD. Obviously, we all know that, and blindness is a big comorbidity, so you would expect that to come up. You could see the in-person administration or the voice-activated phone administration being successful there, but it sounds like that's an important caveat to put in. I think that's an important thing to mention. So I appreciate that comment. I'm curious if there's data about how often that occurs. Do you know what the prevalence of blindness is in dialysis patients?
I actually don't know. I actually should try to see if it's in there.
Because
I didn't think it was a problem until I was doing my own survey study. And, I mean, language was actually less of a problem because it's actually quite easy to find bilingual. Well, for us, it's English and Spanish. But we have plenty of bilingual staff and other interpreters. It was really having to take, like, to your point, you know, having to administer it in person verbally, it takes a lot more staff hours than if the patient's just there doing it themselves.
Okay. Yeah, well, I'll look around for some data on the blindness and see if it's ever been mentioned in the context of doing the either CAPS, the K-Equal, or other measures. It's a very interesting point.
Another thing is, you know, in terms of you know, survey fatigue. Has anybody looked at, obviously they're optimized so they don't take very long, but a lot of my patients still get frustrated with having to do it. Do you know of any centers incentivize the completion of the surveys? Like, you know, if you complete it, then you can get a raffle ticket. Like, cause I know they're kind of stuck there on hemodialysis, but it's still kind of, is a burden.
I mean, not outside of the context of a study. I mean, as researchers, we know that is important to help people finish surveys. But in terms of like clinical administration to meet CMS requirements, I've never heard of it.
Or they allowed? Maybe
well,
they're not allowed.
CMS
to.
Won't allow it.
Okay.
For CAPS.
Yeah.
Okay.
But often that's a good idea to have incentives if you can, especially, you know, one reason you don't want to have them too often though is then people get used to them and, you know, if you can get them to do it without it, of course, it's better. But even in CAPS, we've done incentives, not in dialysis, but, you know, Julie Brown has a paper that just came out last year that, you know, it does increase the response rate substantially if you can pay people even $5. Mm-hmm. But you did that all the time, you know, then you have all this pushback on cost of doing this even higher than it is now.
Yeah, because I know our dialysis unit, the social worker was saying a lot of times the patients leave and, like, most of them leave the surveys on their chairs because they didn't want to.
Sure.
Now, one thing we know, John, is that no patient has died yet from completing the survey.
That's true.
So, John, one thing I wondered if you could talk about, and maybe it's difficult because I probably couldn't myself right now, but you didn't let everybody know, but he was supposed to have already presented this to the KCA group, and then they, because of the weather in the DC, they canceled the meeting. So it's coming up, but there's another presenter who's a clinician, Fred Finkelstein.
Yes.
And he he'll probably be presenting more critical opinions about the existing measures that you've talked about. So I don't know if they'll have a discussion, but they probably will, about what he says compared to what you're saying.
Okay. Well, one thing I know that Fred thinks or has written about is that many of the measures, say like the Katy Qual or any, I think the logic of what he thinks essentially entails that if it's standardized, it can't be tailored unless it's really like an adaptive type of measure, because it's not the patient themselves expressing the issue. They're responding to predefined questions. I don't think that that is a good criticism. I appreciate the response, and I appreciate the opportunity for additional tailoring to any specific patient, but I think that emphasizes the value of a great deal of qualitative work with patients to try to understand what patients' concerns are in general in a particular population, and continued tweaking of measures over time in case there's major topics that are missing, domains that are missing. But the complete tailoring to each patient of every administration might really undercut our ability to standardize measures and know much about populations from a public health standpoint. It would also be extensively intensive compared to the way it's done now in terms of resources, at least in as much as I can think about it. So that's one of the criticisms that Fred's written on in the past, and that's kind of how I would go to rebut that criticism.
I think he also might talk about the burden part too, right? He might emphasize.
That could be true. And you know, it's certainly everyone wants the shortest measures possible that have the best measurement properties. And I think as psychometricians and clinicians interested in measurement science, we're constantly working towards that. And our own recommendations are to take a great starting set of measures and move more in that direction. So you have to start for most cases, you have to start with a much larger set of items and then refine from there. And so I would say that the science is catching up with the need for that.
And you reported reliabilities in the presentation. I don't think you said where they came from. Were those from the original paper?
Oh, yeah. Those are from my own study under review in AJKD. So I forgot to put that in. I'll report that.
Well, that's, wait a minute. That's the KDQLL,
oh.
Right?
Yep.
And what about?
That's KD.
But then you have the ICH CAPS, too.
Oh, I thought I had the Wiedemer reference.
Oh, I didn't know the reliabilities were from there necessarily, though. I saw the reference.
Okay.
I didn't know for sure that you picked them from there.
I believe they are. I can double check.
No, you're
that.
Probably, they have to be then. Okay.
Yeah.
I was just going to suggest that if you're going to check the numbers of blindness, that might affect the response rate, or you might want to enlarge a little bit the group to low vision, or whatever threshold you want there that people are affected to complete these surveys, because that'll be a little bit bigger number. And of course, people with diabetes many of them don't take care of their vision, and they have vision loss, so you might
want
to consider that.
Well, that, you know, non-response is obviously one of the big issues that we talk about, but I think that discussing blindness and trying to accommodate blindness could be one of the more constructive ways to say, okay, let's just not talk about non-response as a homogenous group of people who hate surveys and never want to do them. There's subsets of people who may have reasons why it's difficult to do the surveys. And what can we do to help with that?
Exactly. And low vision is a problem in this group. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, I guess another thing was you have that, CMS site with the data, the state and the national averages. No one can really read that. I wonder if it's better just to highlight a row or so or something.
Sure, yeah, that seems correct to me. I'll do that. other questions or comments?
No, nice presentation.
Yeah,
thank
nice
you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sean.
Okay, my pleasure. Thank you all for tuning in.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye.
Yeah, I've never been to
one
where they
talked to someone. Yeah, I think we had a couple of our disability implementation science things where the presenter was working.
Okay. Because so, I'm usually remote, so I don't
know. Yeah. So did you come here for this talk?
Yeah. So I told Eric, I was like, I'm going to carpool.